geared toward the younger people here this morning. And I think anyone from the age of about 5 or 6 to 18 will be able to identify with some of the things that are saying. And especially teenagers. If you have your Bibles, turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 1. We're going to look at the entire chapter, but I want to read to begin with verse 17. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 17. Proverbs 1, 17 says, "Indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird." Now this verse, of all the verses in chapter 1, sort of puts it in a nutshell. And we're going to be talking about Proverbs chapter 1. Years ago, probably 20 or 25 years ago, I was challenged to do something that I want to challenge you to do if you have never done it. And the challenge was to read a chapter in Proverbs every day. And the way to do that was presented to me was like this. There are 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs, and so each day you read the corresponding chapter of the day of the month that you're on. Most months have about 30 days. So today is the 30th of June, so today you would read Proverbs chapter 30. On the 15th of May, you would read Proverbs chapter 15. You read the chapter number corresponding to the day. And once a month, you will read through the entire book of Proverbs. Now, obviously, there's 31 chapters, so you've got to put that 31st chapter in on the months that only have 30 days, or like February 28 days. But you work that out. And I did that for 2 years faithfully. And I tell you, it made a difference. It slowly begins to add up the concepts and the principles that you read over and over and over, and some of those things come to your mind in the most when you're the least ready for them. Things come up in your life, and the first will pop to your head that this makes application to that, and that's what they're there for, is to teach us how to live. I want to begin this morning with showing you some pictures. We're going to look at about 5 photos, and I want you to tell me what these photos all have in common. All right? There's the first one. Second one. Third one. Fourth one. Fifth one. What do they all have in common? A scar. There's a scar on the face of each of those 5 people. Now look at the next 2 or 3 here. Where do you see the scar there? Okay, you don't see it on the outside, do you? Look at the next one. You don't see it on the outside. You don't see it on the inside, but it looks like, from the expression on these people's faces, that there are scars, doesn't it? And sometimes our scars are not outwardly. In fact, a lot of the times, the most painful scars that we have are not visible. All of us have scarred lives. Every one of us. All of you have been scarred in some way. All of us, more than likely, all of us have scarred other people. We live lives that are imperfect. We live lives that we hurt and are hurt by other people. And a lot of the time, or I shouldn't say a lot of the time, but at least some of the time, the cause of these scars is not just vile, wicked things, although we can always lay it at the feet of sin. But sometimes these scars are just because we are also stupid. And we just do stupid things. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1 is a chapter that sort of introduces the Proverbs to us. And to begin with, I want to tell you what a proverb is not and what a proverb is. A proverb is not an ironclad promise. All right, a proverb is not an ironclad promise. And a lot of times we want to take them as such, but that's not their intent. It's to give you an unfailable promise from God. But rather, a proverb is a dependable tendency. A dependable tendency. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Suppose, over the course of my life, occasionally I hear of some child who has told their parents this. And I want you to think with me about this. Suppose that a parent is going to discipline their child, and so they give them a few swats and they give them a little spanking. And the child looks at the parent and says this, "That didn't hurt." You know, I have never told my dad that didn't hurt. Okay, you know why? Two reasons. One, because it did hurt. Okay, but the main reason is because there was a dependable tendency. I pretty well knew what would happen if I told him that. And I trusted it enough that I always refrained from saying that. Okay? Proverbs are that way. Let me give you an example. In Proverbs chapter 3, I think it's verse 9 and 10, the scriptures say this, "Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all your increase. And as a result, your barns will be filled with plenty and your presses shall burst out with new wine." So here's what you would almost call a promise, but it's not a promise, it's a proverb. Honor God with what you have. Honor God with the first fruits of your labor, with the first things that you get. Honor God with them. And here's what will tend to happen. You will have plenty. Your barns will be filled with plenty. Your presses shall burst out with new wine. Now that is not an ironclad promise. Sometimes there are people who honor God with everything they have, and God, for His own reasons and God's own purposes and for His own glory, takes it all away. But the dependable tendency is that if you will honor God with your stuff, God will see to it that His seed does not beg for bread. That's the proverb, and that's how they are intended to be looked at. Well, let's look at Proverbs. We'll look at the first four verses. Now, these verses show you the benefits of a proverb. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge, and discretion." Now notice what these four verses tell us Proverbs are good for. They are good to give you wisdom. They are good that you might gain wisdom. Secondly, they are good, he says, that you might have discernment. When situations come up, you may be able to exercise good discernment in those situations. They're good to get you instructions. And the last one, they're good to get you to think before you act. To give prudence, he says, to the naive. And the word prudence there means subtlety. It means to pay attention and not be so quick to jump on something. Those are the benefits of a proverb. The second point, where do we begin? Let's look at verses 5 to 9. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. Now, notice what these verses tell us. The first thing that you have, the way to begin in getting wisdom, getting understanding, is to fear God. And this is by far the most important of the things that he has listed, I believe. The fear of the Lord, he says, is the beginning of wisdom. Fearing God. But notice what else he says in verse 8. Hear, my son. Do we have any sons here this morning? If you're a son, raise your hand. There you go. All right. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Now, this is primarily talking about young sons, boys, young boys, listening to your father. Does it mean that young girls do not have to listen? No. It's implied that we're talking about both, right? Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Of all you sons that raised your hand, all of you have a mother? We all have mothers, right? Don't forsake your mother's teaching. Notice what he's telling us here. The primary place, other than fearing God, to get wisdom is to listen to a father and a mother. There are very few parents. There are very few fathers and mothers who do not, at the deepest depths of their being, want what is best for their kids. There are some self-centered parents in the world. But most parents still want what is best for their children. Now, I will have to tell you, there are exceptions. I know a man today who is, if not in jail, on his way to prison, I understand at least, for some sexual abuse of a young girl. Now, that's horrible. But it was carried out with the aid of the girl's mother. There are exceptions. There are people who are so sorry. There are grown-ups who are old enough to have children, and yet they are so stuck on themselves. They only think about what they want to do, what they would like. Their minds are so perverted and so corrupt that they are pitiful excuses for a parent. That does happen. But as a general tendency, even unbelieving parents usually want what's best for their kids. And as a very general rule, a father and mother can impart wisdom to their children. And we're admonished in this proverb, sons, daughters, pay attention to what your parents are telling you. But above all, fear God. What does he say this will look like? You see in verse 9. If you fear God and gain wisdom, if you listen to your father's instruction, if you don't forsake your mother's teaching, here's what will happen. These things that you learn will be a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. Now he's trying to paint us a picture. And it's various ways that you could look at this picture that's painted. But one is a victor. A wreath upon the head was given to the winner of a race. It will be, if you pay attention to what your parents tell you, if you listen to your father and mother, you will be the victor. You will be crowned with the wreath as winning the race. It will be like ornaments about your neck. You will be honored. There will be something of value. We wear ornaments around our neck and things on our head to make us look nice, but also to display something of value. He says, this will be the way your life will be characterized if you listen. Then beginning in verse 10, he paints a picture of a snare. Now you need to listen to this story. Verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you. So somebody is going to entice the son. Now who is it that's going to entice the son? Sinner. Who are sinners? Everyone. So listen, it could be anybody. It could be any of us who would entice someone else to do evil. If sinners entice you, do not consent. Don't go along with it. If verse 11, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol or like a grave. Even whole as those who go down to the pit. So notice what he's saying in these couple of verses. Someone comes to you and presents you with an opportunity. And the opportunity is to take advantage of someone. Now he paints a pretty gruesome picture here of laying in ambush for someone and we beat them up. We take their life. We swallow them up as the grave, as even whole as those who go down to the pit, he says. We take them over. We beat them up. We take everything that they've got. And here's why we do it. Verse 13. We'll find all kinds of precious wealth. We'll fill our houses with spoil. So here's the trade-off. If you'll do this evil thing, we know it's wrong. We know there's a chance we might get caught. But if we do it, here's the trade-off. We're going to get rich. We're going to take everything they've got. And so there's the trade. He says, verse 14, throw in your lot with us. Join us. Let's do this. We'll all have one purse. We'll share all the loot that we get. Verse 15, he says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Then verse 17, we're going to come back to this verse. Indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird. But they lay in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Then beginning in verse 20, we see wisdom personified. We call this the personification of wisdom. That is, wisdom is given traits of a person. Now, over the years as I've read this, there always comes to my mind a picture. And I want you to see what comes to your mind as we read this. Wisdom shouts in the street. Wisdom is a person. Wisdom shouts in the street. Now, I tried to find a good picture that would illustrate what comes to my mind. I really didn't find one, but I want to show you this one. Here's a street preacher. Has anybody ever seen street preachers? All right. I knew a guy that became a Christian, and he did a lot of street preaching. Here's this fellow. Now, when I picture wisdom crying in the streets, for some reason, I picture a almost a ghost-like figure with a long white robe and long white hair and a long white beard with a staff in their hand standing in the street calling out and sort of coming in and out. You know, you see them, then you don't. I don't know why this is the way I picture it. It's kind of unrealistic, isn't it? But wisdom, this verse says, wisdom cries in the street. So here's wisdom outside in the street crying out. She lifts her voice in the square, uses it as a woman. At the end of the noise, at the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. Now listen to this again. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. Where is wisdom at? Is he trying to just name the three or four places where you can find wisdom? No. I think what he's saying is wisdom is all around you, trying to get you to listen. There are wise people around shouting out to you. Pay attention. Wisdom is in the streets crying. She's at the head of the gates crying, crying out to listen. Now what does wisdom say? Verse 22. Wisdom asks two or three questions. Here's the questions wisdom asks. How long, you naive ones, will you love simplicity? How long, you scorners or scoffers, will you delight yourselves in scoffing? How long, you fools, will you hate knowledge? So it gives us a picture of wisdom crying out to us. How long, you simple people, how long will you behave this way? You fools, how long will you hate knowledge? You scoffers, how long will you continue to scoff? Verse 23, he says, turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you because I called and you refused. I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. You neglected all of my counsel and did not want any of my reproof. So let's ask ourselves these questions. Where is wisdom? She's in the street. She's around. Crying out to us. What are her questions? How long, you simple ones, will you behave like a simpleton? How long, you scoffers, will you scoff? What is wisdom's desire? See in verse 23, wisdom's desire is that we would turn our reproof. Wisdom's desire is that wisdom would pour out her spirit upon us and make her words known to us. But then we see in verse 25, or let's start reading verse 24 again. It says, because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. Now notice verse 26. I will even laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes, when your dread comes like a storm, and your calamity comes on you like a whirlwind, and distress and anguish come upon you. I've always thought, how is it that wisdom mocks? How is it that wisdom laughs at us? And I guess I've always sort of looked at it in the most obvious sense, is that wisdom is laughing. Wisdom is just mocking us. And I really don't think that that's how it works out in real life. I think the way it works out in real life, picture in your mind, if you would, two men walking down a road. One is a wise man. The other is a fool. And they're walking down a path. And the wise man exercises discernment. The wise man exercises knowledge and understanding. And he takes the simple, the easiest path. He takes the right path. The fool pays no attention to where he's going. And every time there's big rocks and boulders, whatever, he's stumbling and walking through the briars and whatever, and his life is a mess because he's a fool. And yet he sees the wise man, and he sees that his life is a calm life. His life is not chaos. His life is not chaotic. It's not just junk going on all the time. And just the presence of that life is a mockery to the decisions he has made. It's not that wisdom is actively scorning him. It's just that the results and the consequences that he is having to live through, wisdom appears to be scorning him because he reaches out for that, and it is too late. Look in verse 28. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they shall not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. You know, I can remember... I will spare you the details, but I can remember when I was 19 or 20 years old and living like a fool, really living like a fool. I can remember, though, the time. My dad never said these words to me, but I knew just as well when it occurred. There came a time when my dad had had enough, and my dad took his hands off of me and let me go. You know which direction my life went? Down. You know how quickly it went that way? In a fast hurry. Because the remaining restraints that were upon me were taken away, and I was left to my own devices. That's what we see here. The end of the fool, the last point there. Look in verse 31. So shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. Satiated with their own devices. That means they've ate so much that they are sick of it. When you was a kid, did you ever have to eat everything that was on your plate? And I mean, you may have gotten full, and you may have had enough, but you had to clean your plate. And sometimes something that you liked so well, you just got tired of it. It just didn't even taste good because you were having to eat beyond being full, beyond having enough. And sometimes that's the way it is with our sin. We want these things. We want these desires that we have, but then we get too much of them. And we're ready to quit, and the desires are not. Our companions are not. Verse 32, for the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely, and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. Those two verses paint a picture that I like. They paint a scene that I want my life to be like. I want my home to look this way. Living securely. Being at ease from the dread of evil. I want to back up and just close with this one thought in verse 17. He says, indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird. Now, there's two or three ways you can look at this. I'm just going to give you one, the one that I like the best. And it's saying this, that if you make wise decisions, if you learn to see wisdom and to have discernment and discretion, then you will be able to see the traps. It is useless to set a trap right out in the open where the thing you're trying to trap can see it. Now, perhaps there are exceptions to that with animals, but we're talking about human beings. It's useless to try to trick someone and to try to entrap them and deceive them, and your deception being right out where they can see it and understand it. And he says, when you gain wisdom, that's what it does for you. It enlightens you. It opens your eyes and you see the traps. And it's useless to set a trap in the sight of the bird. And you are the bird because you have gained understanding. You've gained wisdom. And so you see the net. You see the trap. You see the snare in behaving this way. I want to encourage you, this is just a short message, but I want to encourage you to develop wisdom. To spend some time reading the book of Proverbs. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you'd give us understanding. Lord, I know that no matter how much we know, what decisions we make, we are prone to fall. We have to constantly battle with pleasing ourselves. We have our flesh that pulls at us. God, would you give us grace? God, I pray for these young people who are here this morning. Lord, for I pray for my grandchildren. I pray for Stephen and Charisse's children. God, I pray for Harrison, for the Johnson's children, the Foster's boys, McDaniel children, the Bickers' children. Lord, I know I'm not naming them all, but God, I pray for them, all of them. God, I pray you'd give them a heart for you that cannot be quenched by my foolishness. God, I pray you'd give them a desire to love you. God, that cannot be put out by the scars that we inflict upon them. God, give them grace. Lord, to look to you, to turn their eyes upon you, to decide, even right now, that they will follow Jesus. God, would you bring glory to yourself through our lives and these children? Amen.